Good afternoon, everyone. Yat'e. I'm going to just quickly go through introducing myself, since there may be some Navajo people here. My first clan is Nakai Dene. I am Mexican clan, my first clan, that's my mother. And I am born for Senjakeni, that's the second clan, born for the cliff dwellers. And I usually say that I'm totally Southwest because, you know, the New Mexico, state of New Mexico was under Mexican rule after the Spanish, before the Americans came. So we've had a unique situation of about 400 years of other governments being there before the United States took over the Southwest. My grandfather, my Che, on my mother's side, is Kis'ani, which is the Pueblo, specifically the Santo Domingo Pueblo, and and my Nulli is Nanestege, and that's the Zuni Pueblo, distinct Pueblo. So you put that all together with Spanish, Mexican, and the cliff dwellers, that tells you kind of the lineage that I have in my tribal setting. I'm very pleased to be here, very honored that I was invited, and thank everyone that had something to do with this, Nancy and Patricia, for being so patient with us, and thank all of you for being here to attend this session, and especially the students that provided these beautiful necklaces. They smell very good, too. I've always been sunny in terms of my role. I've had a wonderful career working in tribal government in at the Navajo Nation. And at the college, I was basically told that I hold the fire poker, and that I need to go out and do certain things to, you know, how the old woman is the one who, in the Hogan, who sits by the fire, not just to keep warm, but she keeps the information flowing among the people, and she also, as she pokes the fire and the embers fly up, she's saying, do something about this thing that needs to get done. And so I was astonished when I was, of course, it was after menopause, and that's the dividing line, I guess, when you become an elder. I was astonished to have that kind of responsibility in an administrative situation by my bosses. I worked with Peterson Za in the Za administration for many years. And so I felt very privileged to be Sani during those years. I went to college at a time when, let me back up a little bit. You've heard of the Code Talkers and the contribution that they made during World War II. They were a very unique group in terms of not just the language, but because they were probably the few people who were English speakers during that period. The illiteracy rate during the period before World War II was very, very high. And throughout World War II, it took the Rehabilitation Act for Navajo Hopi in order to pour resources into our area to get schools actually up and moving. We had some few people who went away to boarding school. So, you know, among my aunts and uncles in a family of 12, there was only one person that went to school. And so that was very common. So illiteracy was very high among the Navajo people. And so when I went away to college, there were only 500 of us that were in college. Now you see Navajo students all over the world, literally all over the world, including Hawaii. Many places are now in preparatory schools with Navajos, and it's just really wonderful as an educator to see so many young people that are now getting degrees in such a range of fields. So this is, there's been a lot of changes in our culture. I usually refer to it as about 3 to 4 generations in which change has been so fast that the culture itself and the practices have really, and the language, have really become almost obsolete. We can't blame anybody. We can't blame the boarding schools because too few of our people went to boarding schools, very few of them. And we can't say it was a fault of the boarding schools. We can't say it was the fault of the churches because churches were so far away and few and far between that most of us never went to church. So it really comes back to us as the people, and we really are responsible for that decline over these three or four generations. I'm just really pleased to hear my older sister, Elaine Abrams, talk about her cultural ways and how they're working to bring them back. I'm in really wonderful company with my older sisters here. This is wonderful, and I think the message that we have to share is very similar. It's that, you know, we have a situation in reality where our young people are moving away from cultural practices and knowledge and the knowledge of the language towards probably just a generic native identity. And so we have a lot of things that are out there. We have places that I've gone to where their culture and their tribal dance are not powwows, but yet they have they consider the powwow as their cultural dance now. So the generation is absorbing cultural practices from other tribes and owning it as their own. What bothers me is when they start looking at powwow as being a traditional religion. And that happened in a research question that was given to urban people in Albuquerque, and the young people there looked at it as being as practicing their religion. So we have a lot of important things to do, and the social institution that most of the tribes control is the schools. And so there's an opportunity for tribal schools to begin to reteach and to bring back a traditional perspective and to allow students to really understand their background. And that means an everyday usage of things, not just going to a powwow once a year. It means really incorporating it into your life. Our oral traditions really can help with our mind and our body and our spirit. It is a total immersion to help one's development as a person. And, you know, we have a lot of, Navajo is very fortunate because we have a lot of traditional knowledge that is still there among the Hetatli. And as they do their ceremonies, they often talk to people before the ceremony starts to retell clarifications of the oral tradition, to tell what's going to happen during a ceremony and what stories they're going to hear during the ceremony. So there's a lot of information that can be shared. But more than that, our oral tradition gives us a guide for living. And part of that is respect and tolerance. And respect and tolerance to coexist among each other, despite our differences. when the people came to this world, we came through various worlds, from the first world, this journey that we were on into this world, which we call the glittering world. In that, there was a lot of chaos. And so we have to remember that life was not perfect, that we learned through communication how to deal with issues. And that meant the plants, the animals, all of the figures that were a part of the previous worlds met in equal terms to discuss various issues. When we came to this world, things began to change. But in those other worlds, those worlds of chaos, we can see that people improved through communication. And that's really important to our children today, that they understand that balance can be found despite the chaos that's in their homes, that we can use our traditions as a resource. We also find the importance of relationship, the clans. Being able to be good neighbors is really the essence of the beginning of clans. And from the four original clans, we now have over 80 clans because, as I describe myself, we have incorporated the people from the Pueblos as specific clans. We've incorporated the Mexicans as a part of our clans. Now we've got clans that are very descriptive of different areas. And if you're on the reservation for any period of time, you begin to understand a person's clan often describes where they're from. And so you can put together a person's lineage and their background through that. In terms of the oral traditions, we hear a lot about Hojong and how the holy people taught how to have harmony and a balance in their living. And there's some beauty way rules that are really important, particularly for children who curse a lot and to disrespect other people. That one of the rules is to talk with beauty. And so as we're going to get into the curriculum, it is those rules are repeated through the lessons. And so people need to remember that their words can hurt other people. And so they need to watch how they speak, the tone of their voice, and the use of their words so that they maintain it. We also, in the curriculum that I'll be showing you, tell the students that, you know, overdoing it is a concept that comes to us from our tradition, to not overdo a thing, and that includes eating. You know, overdoing it is stepping beyond where you should be, you know, that zone that you have. Don't overdo it. Don't go beyond that. And to pace yourself, and those of you that are doc students in here or college students, to pace yourself, to spend each day pacing yourself so that you can get things accomplished. When you rush, you make mistakes. So the importance of that message is to not rush around, you know, running around doing things. Pace yourself so that you do things and get them right, and, you know, don't rush yourself. Don't make mistakes. So those are all from oral tradition that are given to us that we can pass on in a curriculum, which we're trying to do with our Ways of Life Ina project. Oral tradition also tells us that we need to respect each other within the family so that there isn't incest, so there isn't sexual abuses within the family. Respect the personal space of the other people. And also the consequences for engaging in those kinds of behaviors. So oral tradition does give us a lot of guidance on how to live life. The reality is that with all of this traditional knowledge, does it make a difference for young people today? There is a reality that we have to look at, and that is there is a lot of destructive behaviors. There is dysfunction in the family and in the community. And so in the Navajo courts, they set up a peacemaking mechanism within the court based on traditional emphasis on the relationship between families and between individuals in the family. And that court has struggled to deal with the abuses that are happening in the... Oftentimes, the repeat offenders don't get as much attention as they should, and we end up with people, asking for forgiveness, asking the victim to forgive them, but then they continue to come back again as a repeat offender, and that's something that maybe the Tribal Law and Order Act may help correct. But repeat offenders are really a problem in the peacemaking system, and that needs to be dealt with. But we've had, in our group, in our project, a lot of discussion about how we can make a difference in our children's development and to give them skills to solve problems. We really depend on the Hetatli and the knowledge of people who are much older as to how to put the lessons together. Some of you may be interested in protocols for your public health programs. And I just wanted to share that at Navajo, we have a lot of integration between Western medicine and the Hetatli, that almost every big Indian health hospital has somebody on staff who is there either as a interpreter for the language or as a Hetatli that can do prayers with the family. And so we've done that. Basically, it was the Ganado experience from Presbyterian Hospital. The doctors there, who were missionaries and doctors, got an educating young people like my sister Elaine here. They were teaching them how to become nurses, but they also wanted to have the community and the medicine men, the Hetatli, involved. So that people wouldn't see the hospital as a fearful place. So there was a lot of history there that many of the hospitals now have hogans, and a lot of public areas, public programs on the reservation, they also have hogans for families. I want to just, before I get to the slides, I just want to bring up a couple of concerns of where we need to go, and maybe some of you would become interested enough to look at this area to strengthen education about sexuality, because in the data that I'm going to show, there's really not enough being done to help guide young people through puberty. And, you know, the maturation period to take adult roles and become fathers and become good mothers, that whole area sometimes is really lacking in homes. And so we're looking at trying to put back more emphasis on the puberty ceremony for boys and girls, the Canalda and the Sweat Lodge, and also to do things that would help young people understand how to maybe bring back some of the traditional names for babies, and to do the first laugh ceremony. Our project is teamed up with the Miss Navajo Nation Council, which is made up of all the former Miss Navajos, and that 60 years of Miss Navajos, and we're looking at making young people more aware of their heritage, and so we're teaming up to do that. We have a lot of stories that are important and help us to understand more about ourselves and more about how to relate to other people. One of the important stories that we have, that I don't know if other tribes have this story, and that is for the third and fourth genders and people with different gender identities, we have a beautiful story of the separation of the sexes, where the male and the female separated across a river and said they would never, ever live together again. Well, that didn't last. And it didn't last because, not because of sexual desire, but because there were no children. And because of no children, they began to say, we need to come back together, and we need to, the children are really what makes our lives happier, and the children keep us moving and doing things. And so in that period of time, the third and fourth genders are part of society, and without them, our society wouldn't have survived. The women alone would not have survived. The men alone would not have survived. And so these people should have the distinction of helping save our people. And we see in a lot of schools the disrespect that is shown. And that's very much a concern, that we have so much of our oral tradition teaches us tolerance between species, and yet between humans, we can't seem to remember that tolerance, and we need to bring that back. And so the lessons are trying to reinforce that. Real quickly, we have a pending proclamation for child rights that the president of the Navajo Nation is looking at right now, and we think that that is going to help move things forward. The tribal council just passed a children's code, and you know, we really have a serious problem with child abuses, sexual abuses, serious problem. It's not, you know, we've got cases. We have a backlog of thousands of cases, and anyone who has been there will tell you, you know, it's just enormous amount of time and energy trying to deal with that one problem. In our PowerPoint presentation, and I'll go real quickly through this, we set up a working group of educators, and if you can, we kind of have to always keep talking. This is our working group. Dr. Susie John, I don't know if you know Navajo doctors, she's an adolescent doctor. Behind her is a tribal councilwoman, Glojean Totocini. In front of her is a BIE school program administrator for Chinle Agency. That's Gloria Hale Showalter. And then our president, Ben Shelley, and the first lady, Martha Shelley. And then Dr. Janet Sloman Chi is a psychologist and school administrator, superintendent. Gloria's also been a superintendent. Myself and Shirley Waterhouse, who is an HIV health educator. And so that's our core group of people. We got together. because we started saying, these kids today, we must not have done our job, because the kids today are so different from what they should be. And we started looking at the youth risk and resiliency survey that's done with high school students, and we took the data from that survey. It's a national survey, and it goes by counties and states. And we found in New Mexico that twice the national average on New Mexico data compared to the national. And so in New Mexico, we have students who don't go to school because they feel it's not safe. They get involved in a lot of fights on school during school. Sadly, many of them have attempted suicide. Weapons is a big thing in schools. It's really almost twice the national average for carrying a gun at school. And then having alcohol on school property. Now, this is just part of the survey that the students answer. There are many more categories. And where Navajo is higher than this is in the counties where we have predominantly Navajo high school students, in the counties of San Juan, McKinley, and Grant Cibola, for those of you that are familiar. In those counties, we had a similar pattern higher than the rest of the state of New Mexico. So that tells you how serious it is in those counties for our children. We also have sexual activity before the age of 13. Lots of sexual activity. We know in Indian Health Service that we have 10-year-olds that are giving birth, 10-year-olds who are pregnant. So we have a situation where the ladies that I showed you and myself said, we've got to do something. We've got to do something. So we got a Ford grant, and we decided to work with 4th through the 6th grade students and try to help them to make better choices, help them to understand that they can be stronger as an individual based on their oral tradition. And so we began to reach out to other groups. We first met with the Hitatli in our first step and asked them what would be their advice, what would be their guidance. And I hope in 5 minutes we can go through this. So we went to the Hitatli, and they told us that this generation has no ears. But it's not just their fault. It's not the fault of their generation. The parents are so young, and the grandparents are young. So there's three generations of people that we need to pay attention to. We went to state and tribal service providers to ask for guidance, and Navajo educators. And so here's a group of photos that, and our curriculum, of course, keep going. We decided to do a curriculum with our vision and structure it. But we had various meetings, and if you can just scroll through, we have people that were involved from Christian schools. Our president was involved. Miss Navajo, leader in the Miss Navajo Council. It's kind of dark, but that's a group shot. We had teachers. This young man works at a prison. And I don't know if some of you know, the lady on the left is Nancy Evans. She's our esteemed social worker, the first social worker on the reservation. And she won't retire. So she's still working, and she's dealing with a lot of cases that would curl your hair. A community member, a Hitatli, thanking one of our teachers, thanking the president. A chapter official from Tehachapi chapter, my chapter, our legal researcher who helped us to research Navajo codes and compare them to other tribes. Our Ford Foundation program manager has been very supportive. We had Navajo teachers brought together for writing lessons for the curriculum, and this gives you a range of the teachers that we had that were a wonderful summer, a whole week that we did nothing but write lessons. Our presenters. This lady, I want to hold this just a moment, she's a female Hetathli. Very rare. She's also an educator. She's been a principal for many years. She's an educational consultant. She's one of our top reviewers on the curriculum. She does a lot of ceremonies for women, specifically. Okay, there we are. One of our former Miss Navajos. Two young authors of children's books. And this lady here is Mitzi Begay. She works for Fort Defiance Indian Health Service Hospital, and she's a liaison with the community. And Mitzi is just so wonderful in terms of her helping families and just dealing with so many of the issues that are out there. She came to us and helped us and our teachers getting through some of the concepts that we needed to include. So there she is, straightening out Wilson Gorman about some concept. This is how you do it. We had teachers of all ages, from just recent graduates to people that have been 35 years, 40 years in the system. And then we have two workshops that we do that are important, that we, despite the funding, we're going to continue to do them. One of them was for girls only, called the White Shell Woman Workshop. And when we did those workshops, and we brought female speakers in to talk to the girls, including sexual education, which we didn't know how it was going to be received, and we had so many parents standing up and saying, you need to do more of this, you need to do this. That's why it's that area is really a priority area that we need to think about. So when we did the girls' workshops, they themselves said, where's the boys' workshop? And so we put together the Hero Twins based on oral tradition of the twins. And this is an interesting part of it. The twins, their father was the son, but he wasn't around to raise them. And so when they became young men, they went off to find him. And that's a part of the traditions that is like modern day society. So here we are with the Hero Twins, the boys, getting their buttons and their program, registering their mothers and grandmothers, registering them, their father. Here we are trying to figure out what's next. A Miss Navajo doing the registration. Our council delegate that we asked to MC the program. Some young boys. And a room full of them. This is the speaker of the Navajo Nation Council, and he talked about the magnetic field without any prompting from us, about the magnetic field where the young girl is over here and you're looking at her, but there's this magnetic field, and so like the twins, you should overcome challenges in order to become a better father and a better provider for the young woman that's on the other side. It was very eloquent how he talked to the young boys. We had girls also show up with their brothers. There's a workshop with our council delegates. Our group, a presenter. Workshop. This one is cute. This was the grand prize, and this is the agony of defeat and the joy of success. in the same photo. So you see the little fellow back there? He didn't get it, but this guy did. And there she is, making her little brother fill out the evaluation form. We gave a lollipop to everybody that did it. So she's helping. We're debriefing. There we are. And this lady on this side, if you've heard of Billy Luther, who did the Miss Navajo film, some of the other films, that's his mother. She's a Miss Navajo. In our curriculum, we decided to do four areas for the children and to help them with their identity. And that means relationships. And then the specific one on roles and relationships and health and then their future. So we have a lesson here with the objectives. And we're trying to, if you look at the third bullet, teach them the English and Diné pronunciation for members in their family, and then they can understand how the relationships differ between English and the Diné interpretation. So mothers, sisters of your mother become your mother, brothers of your father become your father, so that you expand your relationship and you're belonging to a bigger group of people than the nuclear family, as it's considered in society. We've put in standards for New Mexico, Arizona, and the Navajo Nation content standards. And then we formatted the activities so that we have a read aloud. And we're calling this a narrative intervention because the read aloud allows for the stories to be told through the grandmother to her grandchildren. And we made the grandchildren coming from California where their mother abandoned them so we can focus on the father figure and we can help them to feel a connection to their grandmother and to the maternal side of their family. And so the teacher read aloud has been really highly praised. We may pull that out and make a book out of it because it could work by itself too. But helping students make choices and helping the teacher to understand whether she's Navajo or non-Navajo, something about what the lesson is. And in the case of the first paragraph, we're trying to help the teacher teach the students to sit with modesty and to sit with responsibility for their own self and take responsibility for their actions. So this is Nully and some of the paragraphs that are in the story, where Nully is talking about the clans and trying to say, you'll never be alone. You belong to many people. Strangers that you meet are going to be your family. And it's a lot of respect and calling people, by clan names. And so Tyler, the little boy at the end paragraph, says, it's like DNA. Everybody can be identified by the mix of DNA from their mother and father. It's Diné DNA. So he's coined this whole new term. And he and his sister talk to each other and go through questioning with their grandmother, their father's mother. And so Tyler and Brooke ask her questions, and do we have the same clan? And she tries to explain that only you, as Brooke, as a mother, can give your children your clan. That's their heritage. And then Tyler, when he gets married, his wife will be the one that will give the children her clan. And of course, Tyler gets embarrassed. He's not going to ever get married. So it's been fun doing the curriculum, and I hope it's going to be free. If you have a website that you would like for us to give you a copy so that you can pass it along, we'd be glad to do that with you. And I really appreciate your patience in at this time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Auntie.